really grateful to be part of this like larger movement towards, you know, helping and supporting Indigenous folks in a more holistic way, like really looking at, you know, mind, body, spirit, like what's affecting them physically, what's, you know, affecting the mental, you know, the mental health, very trauma-informed care as well with like a harm reduction lens. So it is all things that I personally like already really believed in. So it just felt really good to be like empowered through my work in that regard. And yeah, I got like a lot of really amazing opportunities. Like Caitlin mentioned, like speaking at a Board Genius concert was like absolutely crazy.
And I was going to add
and so
that
awesome.
it really adds to how having a younger perspective was very valuable in that moment, because if it wasn't for you working in that building, they would not know who, what that band is, how popular they were.
It was literally like, so funny.
I remember like their management called Two Spirits, and Tegan was the only one in that building that knew who Boy Genius was and knew who Phoebe Bridgers was. And so I guess thanks to Tegan for getting us that gig.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazarowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Many high school students spend time after school writing papers, singing in a choir, or playing baseball. But Nathan Tan, a junior at St. Mark's School of Texas in Dallas, devotes much of his time to environmental causes, like advocating for clean air and restoring wildlife habitat.
We, as young people, really need to take a stand, and I think it's very important that we take that action and continue inspiring people that are many generations older than us.
Last year, Tan founded the Shared Skies Initiative, a nonprofit that's monitoring air pollution in parts of Dallas. Many neighborhoods near factories or highways are heavily polluted, so the nonprofit is installing air quality sensors to collect data that can be used to advocate for change. Tan also works with his school's prairie restoration crew, which plants native wildflowers and grasses to help rebuild patches of the original prairie ecosystem, much of which has been lost to sprawl and farming. He encourages young people who are worried about the environment to spend some time reading news about people implementing solutions.
Understanding that there is progress being made across the entire world can be really inspiring.
And he urges young people to pick an issue they care about and start taking small steps. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
This is Bird Note. In Mexico City, 73-year-old Katia Latouf started a hummingbird hospital in her apartment.
I have now here almost six species. I have a small one like a bee. Makes it doesn't fly like a hummingbird. It's a Mexican.
The bumblebee hummingbird.
Yeah.
Either flying across a bedroom to a large window or resting over the dry tree branches Katia carefully placed on the corners, there are more hummingbirds than most people have ever seen together.
Now I have 82, expecting one more.
Katia says people bring her mostly injured baby birds. Larger animals attack them while they're vulnerable in their nests.
People find them, compassionate people, and they bring them to me.
So how did Katia, who once ran a French high fashion boutique, start caring for injured hummingbirds? It began in 2012, after she survived cancer that was considered terminal. She received her first injured hummingbird and named him Gucci.
Sometimes he was here and I was depressed. He stay on my shoulder, on my head. No, Gucci, I don't want to play now. Please leave me alone. And he used to stay in front of me, looking at me, like saying, pay attention to me. I didn't understand at the time until he dies 9 months later. And it was a new life written to me, because 9 months is the symbol of a new life. When you have a baby, it's 9 months.
Katia has tried giving a new life to each one of the hundreds of babies she's received ever since. For Bird Note, I'm Lucina Melesio.
Let's talk about your writing. How did you get into writing? I remember this is also at the time we were in high school, where I saw you kind of blossom into like this writer. And I remember you know, seeing you, you know, we both were in, I think it was Canadian literature class, and you really, I remember seeing you like flourish in that class, and sort of the mentors and the teachers that we had at that time kind of like
watering the plant that was like your creativity and like seeing how that blossomed into your adulthood. But I really want to see like that progression in your own words. So how did you get into writing exactly?
Yeah, I think again, actually, even in childhood, I remember my mom is, I think she's a writer. She has like always kept journals. And I just remember my entire childhood, you know, we'd be at the park, we'd be like at our community swimming pool, anywhere. And she would always have a journal and she would always be writing. And I think so I just grew up seeing that as like, I don't know, I guess it was just in my world. And she always really valued, writing personally. And then she also like really instilled in all of us, my brothers, like a love for reading. And that was really important to her. You know, she would take time to read us stories all the time. And like, that was a really beautiful, like aspect of my childhood that I really appreciate now. Cause I just got like a taste for it. I developed appreciation for it. So I think it was always important to me in some respect, but I definitely remember, like, I would probably say around 14, like middle school age. I think just through school, kind of, you know, writing essays for the first time and doing like poetry units and stuff and being like, oh, this is like actually a really nice way to express myself. It was kind of funny though, because like as a child, I like have a learning disability. I still have it. But as a child in our education system, like I definitely struggled to some degree with English. Like I loved it, but it was also kind of, I had different struggles with it, like in terms of like my dyslexia. So I'm also super blessed and grateful that I had a school that could offer me a lot of support and could like clue in early on that I had a learning disability. And I think without that kind of immediate care, I don't think I would have like, I don't think English would have been something I actually like grew to love. I think it would have still been like a big frustrating thing for me. So I'm really, really grateful looking back on that, that I was actually in a school that like fostered, you know, really like high quality education. So yeah, I feel like around 14, I started doing it more just for myself, like writing poetry and short stories. And then, yeah, when I got into high school, I applied for the arts high school that we went to in Toronto. And I kind of went more on like a visual arts vibe when I kind of first started. But then as I was there, and again, I'm so grateful that our art school, you didn't have to choose one thing. You could go into a bunch of different arts classes and stuff. So what kind of started out as a visual arts angle really switched into theater, and then from theater really progressed into creative writing as like a huge thing I was interested in. And yeah, I think the teachers that we had were so pivotal to me. And I think they, you know, like saw my passion for it and really definitely like supported me in that and like challenged me and really like grew me as a writer. I'm so grateful for that. And like, yeah, so then through high school, I definitely just kept writing so much poetry and more short stories. And then I wrote two plays in high school. And yeah, writing became something like super kind of sacred to me, honestly, and helped me through a lot of the things that I was navigating as a youth. I had, you know, my fair share of mental health ups and downs. And I think having writing was so important to me. And I think if I didn't have it again, I would be a very different person. And I think I would have struggled a lot more without it. Just the ability to feel like seen and expressed was so vital to me as a teenager. And that really, yeah, came down a lot to poetry, I think, was really the thing I fell in love with. And then kind of after high school, I kind of began posting my poetry on TikTok and garnered a fair amount of attention there, which was a really cool experience as well, just kind of being like seen for that. I mean, there's like negatives and positives, obviously, to our social media day and age, but generally speaking, I'm really glad I did, because I think it, again, like, inspired me in a different way and just brought me, again, with that kind of, like, I think it also made me a better writer in a lot of ways, and just having that kind of, just a lot of practice. And then my most recent writing experience was writing two trail guides for Friends of Killarney Park and Killarney Provincial Park, which trail guides are kind of a short booklet that you would bring with you when hiking the trails, and they explain the, like, ecological aspects of the land you're on. They explain the history. It kind of delved into mine. I did a lot about also just, like, environmentalism, and I brought, like, an art kind of lens into it. Killarney Provincial Park was famously painted by the Group of Seven, so I talked a lot about that, how nature can be so inspiring for art, and how, if not for artists, Killarney was going to be, like, completely logged. So I don't know, this interesting relationship between art and nature, which I think has just always existed, it's very intertwined. But that was such a wonderful experience, and I got to, like, live there and, you know, met so many amazing people there. And I'm so grateful I got to publish two books there. So
I really, yeah, I was very amazed by that work you did at Killarney and how you were in charge of sort of giving, like, this literary context as to such, like a journey through nature. And I feel like that kind of connects to the piece that you're showcasing with us today, this sort of journey through the transitions of, like, adulthood and specifically womanhood and under, like, the human condition. Is there anything that you want to say about the poem you brought to us today?
I feel like this poem, yeah, definitely. I was inspired by the transition from girlhood to womanhood and how fragile that transition is. I think in our, like, patriarchal society, I feel like there's so much pressure on girls to become women so quickly. And I think it's just interesting, you know, like, a girl will start her period and immediately it's like, you're a woman now, you're different in some regard, you have to carry yourself differently, you're not a little girl anymore. And there's, like, immediately that pressure when, you know, girls get their period when they're, like, 10. Like, that is still a girl, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like when boys begin puberty, and they're even more at 13, 14, 15, I don't think I've ever heard the same level of pressures applied to young men who are starting puberty, boys who are starting puberty, of, like, okay, you're an adult man now. This is what it means to be an adult man. Here's, like, the responsibilities, of what you're applicable for. And so even just that was interesting to me. And yeah, just how fragile girlhood is in that way and how quickly it can be taken from a girl. So I think in my case, this poem was very, literal. I was, momentarily panicked at the thought of pregnancy and motherhood, and I was kind of just very much in real time realizing, in the face of this huge life change, how much of a child I still was. I think I rose when I was 19. So it was kind of, you know, this poem I definitely came out of me as a way to encapsulate that fear of, like, looking motherhood in the eyes as a young woman. And not only what motherhood, not only the literal definition of motherhood, but what it means to be a mother in our society, you know, like the judgment of being a mother, but also being a young mother, the isolation that comes with being a mother, the, like, complete metamorphosis of your mind and body. And I was just, like, terrified of it. So this poem very much came out of that. And I also posted this poem on TikTok and received, like, a lot of really beautiful, you know, comments from women who resonated with this to some degree, who definitely resonated with this. I also received a lot of comments from men who were like, if you're not ready to be a mother, then you shouldn't be doing all that. And, you know, very much just kind of, once again, just blaming women. Yeah, anyway, so I think this poem just stuck out to me for this specific episode of transition in the way of that transition from girlhood to womanhood and the pressure of that in our society, kind of forced adulthood that a lot of young girls feel.
If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
Thank you.
all that being said, let's now listen to the collaboration we did on your piece, A Girl Held Together by Bubblegum, Anger, and a Large Slurpee by Tegan Smallwood.
I bought a pregnancy test, sour candy, and a large Slurpee because I am a kid too. And as that 3-minute timer ticked away, fear looked over my shoulder, fear giggled at me, giggled at my stupidity, at my childish demeanor, and I was horrified. At the thought of two little lines, let me be clear, my dear, I was not scared of you. I was scared of myself, because I am not a mother. I'm a girl playing dress up in my mom's closet. I cannot take care of you yet. That does not mean I don't love you, love the thought of you, but you deserve better than what I am right now. You deserve a whole mother. And right now I could only be a mother and a girl held together by bubblegum anger and a large Slurpee. I look at the stick. You are only one line. You do not exist yet. I am a girl again.
That was the first episode of Manuk Me, created, hosted, and produced by Caitlin Terrell, a student at SFU's School of Contemporary Arts, the music and sound program, who did an internship with us here at CGSF over the last semester. And this is the result of that internship. Stay tuned coming Fridays for more episodes of Manuk Me.
Hi, this is Sukyun Lee, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby. This is Bird Note. Bird beaks, or bills, come in many shapes and sizes, and birds use them for just about everything. To collect food, to preen, fight, court, chop holes in trees, weave nests, and more. But in order for a bird to fly, its beak must weigh as little as possible. So beaks have evolved to be ultra-light, like birds' hollow bones and feathers. Just what is this versatile appendage made of? At its core, both upper and lower halves of a beak contain light, bony projections that extend from the skull. These bony parts are covered with a sheath of a tough material called keratin. It's the same stuff that makes up tortoise shells, the scales and claws of reptiles, and our own hair and fingernails. The keratin sheath makes the beak tough, durable, and shiny. The sheath grows continuously because a beak wears down with use. Picture a shorebird, like this black oyster catcher, flipping rocks and hammering shells all day. Ancient birds were weighed down with jaws and teeth, making flight far more challenging. But the beak of a modern bird, whether it belongs to an eagle, toucan, or hummingbird, is a marvel fit for life on the wing. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation.
Hi, this is Towers, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, BC. Diverse, independent, yours.
Aya benish bagabwe. Aya benish bagabwe. سه کدکشنا میخونه آجی که چه تباغک اصلا که بانک سه من دا نوپمک کونه اگه دوتانانان ایا به یا به وین بانک سه نوپمک نوکومه لکسنانک با مادزه با ما آدنو باند نان آدگوشی جیکش یا به مامو اومانچشم مامو مامو گود که ویجا کاردن کوگینه با ویجاردن کوگینه او نیزانی میشه بامکسی که وینا نوکو مگا تکوگن مانه گه کونه گه گشتومن که جانن دادمیک کونه که جویسنیک کونه که زمیناش ماسیک هده گوز که بدیک بیگوز که نانان یا به بیجات کوکوم که گونه گوشتون وینده بی که بیه جات اومدی میجیس موشوم پامازی وین
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m.